But we are
something very long and very grand. But when Jack Mitchell says epic, he means it in the traditional sense, as in the old poetic tradition found in classic works such as the Iliad by Homer. Jack Mitchell is a classic scholar who grew up in Ottawa. He developed a love for iambic octameter, and now he's written his own epic poem called The Plains of Abraham, and he's reading it at stops across the country. Jack Mitchell joins me in studio now. Hi.
Oh, hello. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you today?
Not bad, not bad. I've had a productive day. I was at York Street Public School this morning, and this afternoon too, and I performed the poem on about six different occasions, and it's been a tiring day, but a very, very satisfying to come back home.
When you walked in the studio today, I asked you how much of the poem is in your head and how much of it is on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And you said,
well, pretty much the whole thing. I mean, I wouldn't use any script during performance. I just have myself wearing a kind of black shirt and holding a performative rap wrap, which I didn't bring to the studio actually.
It's like a stick.
It's the kind of thing you don't want to walk through the CBC building or security would take that thing away from you. It began life as a martial arts stick.
Okay, and is that part of the, I mean, do you use that to dramatize some of the battle scenes? Or?
Yes, sometimes. For example, like Wolf himself actually apparently carried a cane in battle, and sometimes when I describe a soldier sort of shooting a musket or something, I can sort of use that as a prop. Most of all, I use it to kind of define different types of narration, whether I'm acting as a narrator or I'm doing a character or something, or whether I'm holding a staff in one hand or the other, to try and show the audience visually sort of where I'm coming from and what kind of persona I'm using at that time.
Okay. Now, how old were you when the Iliad got its hooks into you?
How old? Well, you know, it's funny to say, but I actually recall that I once wrote a little ballad poem based on the story of the Iliad when I must have been about 10. And unfortunately, I can't find it, but I remember the first line, which was, although Prince Paris came for peace, he stole with him a queen. And I wish I could remember the rest.
That's pretty darn good, actually.
Not bad for 10.
Now, is that iambic octameter right there?
Well, that's actually a ballad measure. So iambic octameter is more regular. There's no kind of short, long. It's all short, long, short, long, short,
right,
long, short, long.
Right. And now, but what was it about the Battle of the Plains of Abraham that said to you, this is the opportunity to create this poem?
Well, I was looking around for a kind of subject that would be suitable to the epic vision that was coming from Canadian history, and there's a good number of subjects which are in that score, but I wanted to tackle a subject which was central to the Canadian imagination in one way or another, and also which was sort of far enough removed in time that people could look back and sort of all Canadians could look back and say, well, that was a long time ago, but it retains the mythological quality. So I was looking for myths, really, in Canadian history, and I think I have to confess that the fact that the Plains of Abraham and the Battle of the Plains and the Siege of Quebec does bear a distinct resemblance to the actual story of the Iliad, so I may have kind of...
Well, who's Helen of Troy, then?
Oh, well, there's... supposedly Montcalm might have had a few friends among the ladies in Quebec, but that's never been verified.
Now, when you perform this, you're doing about 500 or 600 lines, correct?
Depends on the audience. For little kids, I probably would not hit them with 500 lines. For a full audience, I do usually between 600 and 700.
And that works out to be about a 90-minute performance?
700 would be about a 90-minute performance. 600 would be about an hour and 10 minutes or something.
But the actual work that you've created is much larger than that.
That's right. Well, and that's kind of like the Homeric tradition, too, where they have a sort of epic cycle all about the Trojan War, every little detail you ever wanted to know. But the Iliad itself is only about a week in the whole 10-year siege. So I have a kind of a great body of material, starting with the Siege of Louisbourg the year before the Battle of Plains of Abraham, and going to the year after that, when there was another big battle on the same Plains of Abraham site called the Battle of Sainte-Foy.
Jack, that is a massive undertaking. When you began to write it, I mean, you obviously had to do historical research as well, and probably from more than one source.
Yes, me.
So, what was driving you, and how did you know when you'd be done?
Well, what I was looking for most of all, I have to confess, was I was looking to kind of pillage the historical sources for good epic material. I looked at the Abbé Casgrain's Montcalm et Lévis, and also Francis Parkman's Montcalm and Wolfe, and those are the two kind of standard narrative things. But also, I looked at the correspondence to try and get a feel for how they'd address each other, how they talk in the rest of those times. And what I was looking for was things that I could present on stage and hold the attention of an audience. And, I mean, there's a great deal of history which is particularly fascinating, particularly when you're sitting in your armchair and able to kind of to set your own pace. But when you're up in front of an audience, you really need to kind of get to the meat of the thing very quickly. And so I needed something with a good amount of characterization, a good amount of tension, and let's say a certain amount of blood and guts in the battle like that. Those were very bloody battles.
Oh, yeah. And I was just thinking about how our painters were inspired by this battle, and also by the deaths on the battlefield, or just off the battlefield, right, of both of the principals. So that tradition, which is old and archaic, is still there. Did that also inspire you at all? Did you look at those images?
Oh, very much. I mean, the death scenes in my poem of Montcalm and of Wolfe are very much triggered by those two paintings, one by Benjamin West and one, I'm not sure who the other artist is, but I think he was actually earlier than West. But he was a death of Montcalm, which looks very much like the death of Wolfe. And both those painters, I think, were trying to stick the contemporary deaths of these generals into the heroic world of painting and the neoclassical look, and there's a bit of philosophy in there, there's a bit of exoticism.
Mm-hmm.
The French painter wasn't actually all that accurate. He has sort of palm trees growing outside of Quebec City, because I think he thought that it might have taken place in the West Indies. he never left Versailles.
Yeah. I'd love to hear a little bit of the poem. Would you perform for us?
Sure. How about this is the sort of the moment when Montcalm is actually wounded towards the end of the battle.
All right, Jack Mitchell.
So now the regiments of France were driven back in headlong rout. And last of all, there stood alone the regiment of Roussillon, unwilling yet to yield their ground, surrendering their hearts to fear. And often then a man would see a trusty friend of many years beside him fall, besoaked in blood and stricken with the deadly lead. Most hard of heart that man would be who saw that sight without deep grief. Amid them rode the dark Montcalm, the chief commander of the French. He bade them yet to hold their ground and guard against a swift retreat. But as he sat upon his steed and called aloud to God for aid, some soldier of the 35th perceived his noble clothes and steed, and then dispatched a musket ball and struck him with the deadly lead. Behold, the bitter musket ball did pierce into his flank indeed. Alas, the bright red blood flowed forth and spilled across his coat and clothes. He offered up a groan of pain and slumped upon his horse's neck. At that, a dreadful panic seized the regiment of Roussillon. With hopelessness at heart, they fled towards impregnable Quebec. They gathered neath the walls of stone, protected by the rumbling guns. They sought to pass the city gates and fill the narrow Porte Saint-Jean. Beyond, the women of Quebec were gathered on the well-paved streets to hear the news of who had won upon the plains of Abraham. But when they saw the dark Montcalm, his coat and clothing spilled with blood, they screamed and called his noble name, and wailing filled the well-paved street. For much they loved the dark Montcalm, the chief commander of the French. Yet dark Montcalm sat up before them, speaking clearly to them thus, "Dear ladies, please, you see it's nothing. Do not fret on my account." And yet they saw that he was wounded, stricken with the deadly lead.
Jack Mitchell performing from his epic poem, Plains of Abraham, and there's some of the blood and guts in battle you're talking about.
Yes, right, exactly. Well, I think it's important to emphasize that, this was not kind of war with a human face. This was definitely quite anonymous. They just sort of blow lead balls at each other, and with no real aim. And the wounds these things inflicted were really terrible, because the bullets were what we now call sort of soft-nosed bullets, which kind of do terrible things to you when they hit you. So, I wanted to capture the horror of it, too.
So now, earlier I asked you how you knew when you'd finished the poem. When it's this massive, mm-hmm. how did you know that you'd finished the story and that was the end?
Well, I haven't really finished in the sense that it's continuing to be an ongoing project, and I'm still receiving wonderful feedback from audiences, both about what they like and what they don't like, and when they're going to yawn and when they're not going to yawn, but also sort of historical consultation along the way. I've had a wonderful opportunity to chat to some historical experts in different performances, and they wanted me to correct, for example, the fact that Wolfe was not hit on the left-hand wrist, he was actually hit on the right-hand wrist, and I was like, yes, I must improve it right immediately.
Do you think Homer was always revising the Iliad?
Yes, I think it was an ongoing process, maybe spanning several generations, perhaps, where Homer or his descendants or the performers of Homeric poems would always be sort of in friendly competition with each other to try and get the best poem they could. Also because there were huge cash prizes in those days for epic poets.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. Well, not quite as high as for the guitar player. The guitar players always got more, but the rhapsodes were second.
Yeah, what about you as a performer? Obviously, you're serious and committed to the poetry, but when you decided you were going to perform this as widely and as energetically as you do, did you have to go back to your days of high school drama or anything like that?
Oh, well, indeed, because I'd only done a little bit of high school drama. I was familiar with being up on stage challenge, and I'd won a debating championship in my term, my time, but I hadn't really had any experience of standing up in front of a huge crowd and speaking in verse for half an hour or an hour. In fact, I'm not sure many people really do. So
I've not done a lot anymore.
Well, it was definitely kind of terra incognita for me anyway, and that took a lot of getting used to. When I first started out, I really had to sort of trust the fact that somehow, on a theoretical level, this should be working, and the fault probably, I hoped, lay with me as opposed to with the type of poetry that I was doing. And lo and behold, the more I do it, the better I get.
But now that you're getting out to the schools and doing it as many times as you did today, how do you feel about the way that you're mastering the material?
Oh, it's absolutely the case that I have it totally mastered at this point, if I may say. More because I've revised it so many times, and every time I'd revise it, I try and memorize the new version. And by now, having revised it so often, having memorized so many different versions, even if I can't remember a particular line, I can go and say, well, I know I once described it like that, or I think this would actually work pretty well. And so there's a certain amount of improvisation.
Yeah.
And no show is really like another show. So it's a question of internalized kind of thing.
Does the text, as it exists now, is it available to people?
Oh, yeah. Well, if you were to go to the poem's website, which is plainsofabraham.ca, you'd find a text of the poem if you go under poem. And that's a certain text. I mean, it wouldn't be a definitive text that I would use in any given rendition of the poem, but it's a pretty good sort of standard edition. It's as close as you can get to the poem and performance on print, I think, as you can.
And any plans to publish a definitive version or to perform a definitive version?
Well, most of all, I'd like to perform a definitive version with the whole 4,000 lines in one place at one time.
How long would that take?
That would take at least a day. I think that would take about 8 hours. And I need a very devoted audience. I think I have to spread it over several days, or maybe eight days, an hour each day. That's a publication. I mean, I'd eventually like to publish it, I think, but I really enjoy still working on it, and I don't want to part with it just yet.
Best of luck, Jack. This is a great obsession. Thank you for telling us about it.
Oh, wonderful to be here. Thank you.
Jack Mitchell, the creator of the Plains of Abraham epic poem, which you can read at plainsofabraham.ca. It is 24 minutes after 4 o'clock.